Hello and welcome to Agony Aunt and Uncle. This is the podcast where we try to be literally what it says in the title, which is your auntie Nadia and your uncle Mark, in that we are not professionals, we are not experts, we're just people with a whole lot of life experience.
It's a bit weird for us though, isn't it? Because I mean, so much of our channel is kind of hijinks. Well, it's not actually just stupidity and silliness, but this is adulthooding.
This is adulthooding, but you can never take the child out of me and Mark. You just can't.
No.
So we try and just, whenever we're talking about which ones we're going to answer, we always think, now, what would we say if this was, and then we'll conjure up a friend of ours, or if it was our daughter, if it was a, that's why we always ask your ages, because it makes a big difference. And that's how we decide. Now, recently, well, actually, over the last few weeks, couple of months, there's been quite a few sex questions come up. So we thought, why don't we just make this a sex one?
Why not? Let's do sex.
Let's
talk about sex, baby.
And we've picked three different ones that are, well, we picked one, which is a bit of a cheering up one, actually, from an older chap.
So we have a threesome of queries.
Yes. But I think the other two that we've chosen, I think, are pretty universal. These are problems that every relationship could face or does face.
Okay. So, let's do it.
First one. And we do keep everybody anonymous. And this first one is from a man. We've got two from men, actually, which is really nice. We like to get... Because I think it is harder for men to put pen to paper, but I think... or finger to keyboard. But I think that we're going to make more of a concerted effort to look for the men. To encourage
to
more men.
Basically, Nadia's saying there is she wants to attract more men.
More men. Yeah. Because I think, you know, we talk a lot about mental health and why men's mental health is so much worse than women's often, especially in this country. And we it's down to people not sharing. So let's share more.
Let's do it.
But first, I'm going to have a big slurp of coffee.
That was a nice sound, that, wasn't it?
I'm listening to this other podcast at the moment. Absolutely gripping and horrible and terrifying, because it's all about a cult. But her husband and her drink Jack Daniels and Coke all the way through it.
What, whilst talking?
Yeah.
What?
Well, actually, she had a vodka soda in the one I was listening to.
Telling the story?
Yeah.
They're slurping.
Well, they've slurped a couple of times by accident. It's not a slurping podcast, but...
I think something about podcasts that people like is the sort of granular... Is it ASMR or whatever that thing is? They like that sort of grainy, granular, right in the lug hole kind of...
Well, that slurp
ambience.
I just did then would have annoyed me, so I do apologise. It was an accident. I didn't realise the coffee was so hot.
OK, dilemma one.
OK, my wife and I met at university and it was sex, sex, sex. But, of course, we had very few responsibilities then. Life is now very different with kids, family and work always seem to get in the way. How many people actually feel sexy when they're either worn out, working or changing shitty nappies? My wife and I have to admit, have let things drift and we haven't made sex a priority. I almost feel embarrassed to say this, but we haven't had sex for at least a year. Just on that quickly, I think there's a lot of people like that, but people just don't say it, so don't be embarrassed. I can remember being young and thinking that this would never happen to me, but here we are. If my wife feels half as lonely, undesired and unattractive as I do, why, oh, why can't we just have an open, honest conversation? Any tips at all from you both would be gratefully appreciated. You never know. I might even have the courage to watch your answer with my wife, if, of course, I'm lucky enough that you read out my dilemma. Right. I think we should do things a bit differently here.
Right.
Because, actually, we've talked a lot... fair amount on our other podcast, How to Stay Married So Far. We've spoken very openly, haven't we, and honestly, about the dry, fallow periods of time in our life, sex-wise, whether that was kids or menopause or mental health. And we always caveat. So say we're talking about the dearth of sex around motherhood. We always... And Mark is very good and very feminist and very understanding and will caveat everything he says by first saying he understands, you know, that labour and pregnancy and breastfeeding, all of this is really hard. I'm going to suggest, Mark, that we talk about that afterwards. And right. that actually, especially as this is from a man, I don't want you in this moment to think about the woman's position, right? I don't want you to have to... I don't want you to say anything about the breastfeeding or the vaginas or anything.
Right.
I just want you to tell me, and therefore the audience, and therefore our friend here's wife, what that rejection feels like. Because when one is in that place of not really wanting sex and you're pushing somebody away, it's often because of all sorts of stuff going on in you.
Mm.
And one can forget what it might be feeling like for the other person. So if you can take yourself back to the days when it was like quite obvious that I'd rather stick hot needles in my eyes than have sex, what did that feel like personally?
Okay, well, I mean, yeah, the interesting thing about this is, you know, every relationship has that intensity at the front and has a sort of unsustainable intensity at the front. And I think, and the reason I just want to home in on that unsustainable intensity phrase, it's taken me almost an embarrassing number of years, or it took me an embarrassing number of years, to really even accept that that was a thing or just something in relationships, that you can't maintain that high level, high kicking.
It's a letting go, it's kind of grief.
And also, it is a kind of grief, but also, yeah, I think it's tied into a number of different things. I think it's not just tied into masculinity, toxic masculinity, all that malarkey.
No.
But it's also tied into mortality.
Youth, exactly, youth.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's tied into... it's not even that your expectations as a young, red-blooded male are that you're going to just be having sex all your life and da-da-da-da-da. But I do think you're not... understandably, you're not in a position where you even want to entertain the thought that this isn't going to be high up your agenda or something that you're going
great.
To do an awful
it's
lot
fun.
Of. Exactly, it's great
Feels
fun.
Good.
As this person clearly phrases, you know, the responsibilities aren't there, you're not working so hard, you haven't got children, you haven't got extended family, you haven't got all the worries. I mean, it's not just about the practical physical involvements, it's the existential worries and family worries, the worries that come with getting older as we spend most of our time worrying about parents, worrying about siblings.
But what does it feel like to be rejected?
But well, that's a heavy loaded word, rejected.
That's what it feels like.
But no, and I'm pleased that we're actually on this word, even though I wanted to push back on it.
Yeah,
first.
You see where he went all back around the houses trying to. Yeah. What does that feel like if his wife isn't speak for him and try and like imagine, you know, that it could be. Obviously, you can't say exactly, but how does it feel?
Well, it feels like an absolute wound. It feels like an absolute sort of stab to the heart. You will feel... this isn't just about wanting something in a sort of demonstrative kind of childlike stamping one's foot kind of, oh, this is something that I thought was part of the deal or part of the contract. It's a huge... it feels like a huge rejection. And I think the reason it's possibly felt even more keenly by men, rightly or wrongly, is that men... are able to engage in the act of sex and being intimate more freely and more easily, that it's always better. And I know I don't sign up to this idea that men don't need the emotional, you know, contingent to it. They do. And I think more men than men would admit and women would like to accept actually need that emotional aspect to sex as much as women feel they do too. But I would be lying if I didn't say not as much as women. And so we attach much more to, if you're not having sex with your partner, that is a rejection of me. I'm outside of something. I'm being parked outside of something. And especially if it's been a highly sexed relationship up until that point, then the contrast and the feeling of rejection or the feeling of change is keen. But I think it doesn't just speak to... I think it doesn't just speak to rejection. I think it speaks to all the other fears that creep into men, which is a kind of becoming, you know, obsolete. I think men's mental health problems and men's menopausal problems, I think, kick in a way that are different to women's. You know, I don't think enough analysis has been done about the hormonal shifts in men. But I think it's why a lot of men kill themselves, a lot more men kill themselves. Men hit an obsolete point. Our fear is one of becoming obsolete. And I think that I'm getting to the point. And I think the fear of rejection around this is, as a man, you're always looking for what are the first signs of me becoming obsolete? What are the first signs of me becoming surplus to requirements? And I think, if I'm really honest, I think one of the first feelings around certainly becoming a parent is my work has been done. I'm not needed as much. on a primal level. I'm talking, and that's being really honest.
I think most men
would probably, on some level, even if you intellectualise it, feministise it, all this kind of, you know, all this kind of stuff, I think on a fundamental level, I think the deep, dark recesses of fear for men is, oh, I've supplied what's wanted to have a family, and that's it. And in fact, all the sex was a prelude to this. It's not about sex for sex's sake. So I think, yeah, that's...
What does it feel like when you can feel somebody hanging off the side of the bed rather than touching you?
What do you mean, hanging off the side of the bed? Well, pulling away from you.
Yeah.
That's horrible. It's really horrible. And I think also...
What kind of fears come in on, like, what would be, you know, if you... It's difficult, because I'm asking you to put yourself in yourself plus other people's place. What would be the fear of reaching out?
Well, the fear of reaching out in that instance is that... And again, I'm going to be great. I don't want to caveat everything. So I just want to say it. So the fear of reaching out is that I think most men, and certainly I would feel that if you were to reach out, women assume you're only after one thing and that you're only going to be interested in a sexual contingent or whatever it is that you're reaching out.
Is that true?
Sometimes, but not always. It really isn't always. And I think it's that thing of damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Can you understand why a woman might feel like that?
Well, I can certainly understand why women would feel like that in certain relationships where it's the currency of sex is the currency of sex. You know, I think, again, it speaks to what is the kind of sex that you had when you were having happy, constant sex. What was the nature of that? Because happy, constant sex in a relationship doesn't necessarily mean it was all good. It may well still have been skewed to a, without hating to use the phrase, you know, some men are not particularly imaginative in that department. And so if they're not imaginative in that department, they're certainly not going to be imaginative managing a situation where your partner's not wanting to have sex with you.
Would it ever leave you feeling lonely?
Yes. Yeah, lonely. So, and I can think of a period of time in our relationship where there was a very long, protracted period of time, menopausally around that time, where not that one ever thought... I mean, I wasn't in the position, and in fact, I seem to remember in a row, you know, you didn't mean it sort of genuinely, but I think there is that fear or feeling or worry in men that... Well, certainly I would find it a worry that if a woman would say, well, look, if you want sex, go and find it somewhere else. I could never, in a month of Sundays, imagine that as a solution to it. And yet, I think where you are left lonely and on your own is thinking, oh, well, what kind of sexual individual will I be if I never have it again, if I love this woman and I want to support her, but that aspect of it has just gone. And I think the other thing that men stumble over, and I don't know how this is resolvable, is women will be like, well, I can't give you a timeline on this. And men want timelines, not want timelines like in a demanding fashion, but I think men, you would, if you're the one who's kind of wanting it but not having it, rather than the one who just doesn't want it, part of you is going to be thinking, well, what is this going to be like this for a year, for 2 years, 3 years? What does that mean for a relationship?
That's a disaster to do that with a woman.
Well, of course it is. Of course it is. And so you don't flag that up.
But the man is wanting that because he's wanting to know what he's... If he knows what's happening, then he'll be able to deal with it better. But that's where I think men are from Mars and women are from Venus thing comes in, where it's just the language is so different that you lose the ability to understand.
Because if
a woman felt that there's as much time as is needed, that is going to take the pressure off them. Mm. Whereas a man might need to know what the time span is because it's going to take the pressure off them. Do you know what I mean? It's that different language.
But I don't think it's just born of a selfishness. I think wondering when it might change is born of reawakening that connection. And I think, you know, again, I think...
I didn't, when I was answering that, I wasn't thinking it was selfishness. I was just saying I think that it's just a different way often that men and women...
I mean, sometimes I want to sort of flip the kind of question around the other way, is that if you were in a relationship and say, I didn't want sex for a while, how quickly or not would that go to a place of you thinking it was because I didn't find you attractive, or would you feel it was a rejection?
It's normal.
Yeah.
It's absolutely normal. It's you know, and I have friends that it's that way around, and they do feel unattractive. And I think maybe we should stop from saying men and women, actually, because, you know, it could there's the same sex partners, of course. It swaps back and forth. It just happens that we are in a heterosexual relationship. And this is a heterosexual, from a heterosexual couple. But you can put this into any situation. It's like when one person does and the other one is not on the same page. But because this is very particularly about marriage and about the decline of a marriage where there's a decline in sex and it's being attributed to children and work and everything, I would say that my top tips would be, first of all, you say here, if my wife feels half as lonely, undesired and unattractive as I do, why can't we have an open, honest conversation? The surprising thing is that often when somebody is still wanting sex, they assume, and still wanting that person, they assume that that person is feeling attractive and desired and not lonely because the other person wants them all the time. That's not the case.
Right.
Absolutely. In our dry periods, I'm looking for a different word, but I can't, you know, which were children, mental health stuff with you and jealousy. Mm. That was a big time for us where there was, and menopause, all of those different moments in our marriage, I felt all the same things that you've said. Even though it would have been you still wanting and me not, I felt all those same things. I felt unattractive, felt lonely, felt undesired, not sexually, but undesired as a person. Mm. I felt that. So I think that might be something, that might be a good point for you to start the conversation with your wife. Maybe you could say, you know, I'm imagining that you might be feeling this, because I'm feeling that way. Is that right? You know, just find your way through to the conversation. Don't make any big statements, any big demands, but try and find your way into the conversation. Try and set some time aside to have the conversation. And as I always say, if there is no time for a conversation, write it down, because then the person has time to process it. It doesn't turn into a great big argument. If it was a really loving letter where you might say, my God, look at us. Wow, do you remember back in the day when we were like at it like bloody rabbits? Well, of course it wasn't going to stay the same. Immediately she's going to feel less pressure. She's going to feel, okay, so I'm not having now with these three kids and the job and the cooking and the food. I haven't disappointed us in that I'm not still this, yeah, let's just do it. That would immediately, if it were me, I would feel like, okay, we're accepting we've moved to a different phase. And then I would have wanted to hear something like, this is just a period of time for us, you know. What else can we do to take the pressure off ourselves? Not necessarily to have sex, but I'm whispering because our kids are up there, but to just have a bit more time with each other, because the sex has to be the last thing. The first thing has to be the helping each other, listening to each other, spending time with each other, giving each other a kiss or a hug, a surprise one, helping with the dishwasher, not then standing back and wanting a round of applause for it. You know, all those little things, and then vice versa, what your wife could do. It's all those little things that are the foreplay to bringing your sex life back.
I think one of
the most... To a new place, not going to go back to the beginning, but to a new place.
I think one of the most common misapprehensions or mistakes that I think a lot of women make about men is that any affection or any intimacy is a prelude towards the expectation of something more.
Too often it is.
I'm sure it is. And so what my line of advice would be within this would be to perhaps do this, which me and Nadia still to this day do, where we've become so distracted and, you know, we're busy and we're not really connecting or we're not... whatever. Is to say to each other, look, let's protect either a date night at this point, or let's make a decision to be more affectionate with each other. Let's make sure we always hug each other at the beginning of the day or at the end of the day. And the weird thing about saying something like that, but saying it without the idea, but you say it, but you actively say without it leading to anything else. Let's say it's not about that, because then she'll be clear, you're clear, and actually it means that you're focused on what that moment of intimacy and affection is about, rather than it being the sort of stage one of a stage two of a stage three of a stage four. And I promise you that perhaps potentially through doing that and being quite sort of, you could argue, it will feel like, oh, that's very unsort of, what's the word? It's very unspontaneous. It's not sort of authentic. It's kind of
no, but then you bring the spontaneity back into it.
Not only will the spontaneity come back in, but you'll start to appreciate other aspects of intimacy between each other, which will in and of itself accumulate and get you to a place where suddenly you find it may well be happening. And I think that's really important. To this day, when we say to each other, let's make a real point of seeing each other, of kissing each other hello or goodbye, of hugging each other at some point in the day where you literally... the world can stop. This is allowed. And you take a moment.
And I think the really important thing with that is to start with the sentence, let's say, absolutely, we're not going to have any sex whatsoever until the 12th of November or whatever. Right? Even if we both really want it, we are not having any sex. Because then you can both relax into finding a way back to it. Then little notes. Do you know what? I really miss holding your hand. I've just realised we don't hold hands anymore. We haven't given ourselves that time to do that. So, like, sometimes a date night, if I'm going to be honest, can feel like a huge pressure. Like, you've got the kids, you're tired, think, oh, fuck, I've got a babysitter, I've got to do this. So keep it really small. Like, let's watch that film that you always wanted to watch. Or let's, you know, just really small things. Let's take some time. Let's get up a little bit before the kids so we can just sit and have a coffee together. All those little things, those little building blocks, but take sex off the table, because I'm telling you, the amount of women that I spoke to that say, yeah, they say they just want a hug, but it immediately, after 2 minutes, after a minute, it's turned into something else.
And Matey Phillip, it's incumbent on you to absolutely hear what she's saying there. It is not about it leading to something else. Don't be thinking that might be the fanciful byproduct of it. It's about you actually doing...
He's not actually said that he wants it and she doesn't.
No.
They've both sort of neglected it.
My point is I think it's a really good discipline to actually say to yourself, that is not the expected, nor it's going to be. Is it going to be
Take
the outcome?
Off the table.
The other thing I would also say about the whole date night thing is don't get locked in. I fall foul of this. Don't get locked into kind of delivering a perfect occasion. More often than not, when we've agreed that we want to go out or whatever, life gets in the way and we're tired. All it requires is a bit of a pivot and say, well, date night can be over there on the sofa in front of the telly. Chilling together. You don't need to... Because what happens with
Date night for years always had to be your sushi.
Yeah,
do
but
you remember?
Become, it,
for years.
Yeah, but otherwise you stress the intimacy out of even just being able to sort of be comfortable.
I don't want to go to your sushi. You know, maybe something like that where you just go, oh, let's look for a nice little new eat. Where you haven't got to get dressed up. It's not a big night. Oh, there's a little... Where you could go for an hour, especially with little kids, because you just get too tired.
Yeah.
Okay, so now just... this is more of a just to cheer people up a bit, really, not really a dilemma, but it's a nice one.
I'm a regular watcher of your Coffee Moaning show, and I've heard you discuss a few times the downfalls of dating apps. So I really wanted to share my success through them. Oh, wow. I've been really lucky since my divorce in that I've been on a few dates, all of which were a lovely experience, even though there was no real spark. But, and it's a big but... 3 years ago, I met my girlfriend on Bumble. Oh, God, sorry, I thought this was by a woman. This is by another chap.
Yeah.
3 years ago, I met my girlfriend on Bumble. I'm 58, by the way, and we get on brilliantly, as we have a lot in common, especially when it comes to sex. She's younger than me and has really helped me rid myself of some of the shame around sex that my generation grew up with. We've been trying all sorts of things. We even went to a rope tying class. Wow.
Who knew?
Wow. Is that the art of Japanese rope binding? I think it might be. Wasn't particularly sexy, but it was good fun. Anyway, I just wanted to share that it's not all bad and that it's possible to find your right partner, even at this age, on a dating app. Oh, wow. Well, it's funny you should say that, because one of the things I nearly arranged in our saucy Vlogmas was Japanese rope tying. For us both.
God, I'm bloody glad you did.
Yeah, I thought you might be. I looked at it and I thought, I don't know if I like the sound of this.
I thought
but
it was
anyway,
quite nice.
I'm pleased it worked for you.
Yeah, and the thing that he, you know, that she's younger and he's found out these new, you know, and he's discovering new things. And I think, you know, even if you haven't got divorced and you've gone on a dating app and you found, you know, I do think it is, you know, as your kids grow up a bit more and they're not so reliant on you, to dare to just step out a bit of your comfort box. And that, you know, he people often speak about our generation being so, like, really still so shame-filled a lot of the time about sex. And there's lots of stuff that goes on with the younger generation now.
Polyamory, couples to thruples,
oh,
you name
no,
it.
Oh, no, don't want a thruple, God. Couples to thruples, we watched it, we've watched that series.
We're going to talk about
that. We're going to do a whole thing on that, because it was just like, no, it made us absolutely sure we didn't want a thruple.
Well, this made me think, it is nice to hear this, and I can think of a couple of other people I know who've got incredibly successful relationships, children, you know, the whole shebang through meeting someone on an app. So I think it is really nice to kind of hear and know that actually it's not all... stress and horror and difficulty.
For me, it's
and
the same as, like, in our day, people would meet each other in a club. I mean, what's the likelihood of meeting someone that you're going to actually really like in a club? And I think, well, it does happen. But it happens loads of ways. It's difficult to meet people, especially in London, God.
I mean, if we were to split up or one of something catastrophic happened to either one of us, could you see yourself ever using
absolutely
a dating app?
Absolutely 100% not.
Wow.
And I tell you why. Because
the rejection.
I do believe that you can find somebody on an app, but I just don't have the courage for it. Because I was like that anyway before apps. Before, I could never just go on a date or just like, I had to know somebody quite a bit before I would go anywhere or speak to them. When I see, you know, you have to go out, you have to have a drink with this person, you have to, or book something else in case you can't bet. No.
I couldn't. I wouldn't be able to bear the frequency of potential rejection. So, you know, you meet six people in a week and you don't hear back from four of them. You're like, oh, my God.
I'm also massively aware that we say that from the comfort of being in a relationship.
Yeah,
and so who knows? We can never know, can we?
We can never know. So I'll be downloading my app later today.
This one breaks my heart. And I think that this is relevant for a lot of people. And it's... whether we will be able to say anything that directly helps, no, probably not. But what we wanted to do was read this and give you a hug and say we hear you and say that. Anyway, let me read it first so you know what I'm talking about. I'm a 38-year-old woman and for the last 8 years I've been struggling with miscarriages and IVF treatment. Awful. Actually, I want to pause here and say that we actually do have a podcast in our How to Stay Married series where Mark and I both talk about our experience of our miscarriages. And maybe we can put the link underneath because it might help with that. This breaks my heart, but I believe that this has destroyed mine and my husband's sex life. I feel there's been so much done to my body that I don't even know how to feel sexual anymore. Sometimes it feels like half the world has looked at my vagina to the point where I can't bear the thought of anyone else going near it. It's so sad because I love my husband so much, but the thought of sex is just a no-no. Now, I am still desperate for a baby, so that is the only reason I would have sex. And though I've never said this to my husband, I know that he knows that I know that I'm not really going to want him sexually. I feel so sorry for him that sometimes I consider telling him that it would be okay if he had sex somewhere else. I can't share this with anyone, so please keep me anonymous. As I sit here writing this, I ask myself, what could you possibly say? Well, I'll tell you what I can say. I can say you have been through the wars, not only physically, but emotionally. And if you think of any trauma and any war, the last thing that you are going to be able to think about is sex. So in this moment right here, right now, it will feel like you never want sex again. And that is the case for so many people for so many different kinds of reasons. I mean, for instance, when people suffer grief, when they, you know, a death, a loss, they can feel like they're never going to want sex again. Like, or when a child has been really ill. So many different reasons that people think they are never going to have sex again. And, you know, I get that. And I think it's really important in anything in life is to just literally say never, because we don't know. And I think you are, from the sounds of it, you are just so desperately sad, desperately weary. I hear the weariness in your soul. And I also hear that you really love your husband and you've probably just distanced more and more. The more difficult this has become, the less you've wanted to talk. The less you talk, the more distance you've become, and on and on and on. And I would beg for you not to say to your husband, go and have sex somewhere else, because actually, if you refer back to the first answer to the first question, when Mark said that would just be devastating, I think you might hurt him even more because he wants you and he wants that. And you're going to have to, whether you have children or whether you don't have children, this doesn't have to mean the end of your relationship. And I think because you're in the midst of your trauma and your pain, you could do something to push away this person that you've said you love because you just want to deal with your grief. I mean, if you were my friend sat here now, or my daughter, I would say, please, please try and get some sort of counselling. There's a really, there's so many good, what am I trying to say? Societies. No, I don't know. There's so many groups, great groups that deal with this. Even maybe a group where you and your husband go and talk together, so you're not in the echo chamber of your own hell.
Yeah.
And think about, you know, rather like I said in the first one, think about writing to him and saying this and saying, it's got so bad, my feelings of numbness and not being able to converse, that I've even considered saying this to you. And of course, that would be the end of the world to me, because I love you and you're so important. And shower him with a bit of love and ask for patience between you. You never know, he might be feeling a bit the same way. So don't throw away this with, because what you probably need is just more time to heal.
Yeah, I mean, I would totally chime in with everything that you've said, and I would say, yeah, have a listen back to that first dilemma that we were talking about. It's a really good point, and Nadia sort of summed it up much more pithily, which is, it will hurt. The idea that I think that a man wanting sex, a partner wanting sex, the suggestion to go and get it somewhere else, I'm not suggesting for a minute that you're being heartless in that, but it will be a wound. It's a real wounding, because it doesn't speak to the loyalty, the relationship, the sanctity of that relationship, the fact that that's not what he wanted or wants. And so I think it is really important to, if you can, step away from maybe making that. I understand where it's coming from, because you're worried.
She doesn't want the added pressure. No, you don't want the added pressure.
The other thing I would also say is, as with a lot of these things, it's a little bit like, you know, with a 12-step recovery program or something like that. Sometimes just saying, you know, actually, this is really stressful. Because I remember a friend of mine years ago who was going through something similar, where it wasn't quite IVF treatment, but the nature of the sex that his partner was having with him, or the sex that they were having together, was pretty much solely about trying to get pregnant. And the danger and the difficulty and the sadness that crept in was that if you like, the charm, the heart, the purity, for want of a better expression, of having sex because you fancy each other and love each other and all that kind of stuff, went for him. And so he felt very functional. He felt very like it was difficult to know what he was feeling when he knew it was the right time to have sex. So in saying that, I think it's really important to say, he probably is feeling exactly the same as you, in a very, very different way, obviously, because he's a man. And the only thing that you could really, I think, try and do together, I mean, it works for me sometimes, is a gallows sense of, you know, come together with it. Come together with compassion about, wow, what a bloody nightmare this is for us both, and look how difficult this is for us both. And just, you know, bear in mind and don't try and define him as a man like all men. Because believe it or not, not all men are like all men. And, you know, he will be feeling his own sadnesses and worries and fears and anxieties and what have you. So, again, yeah, it might be that there's some kind of counselling that you need to go for. And this will change. Nothing is ever fixed. Nothing ever stays like this. But I get it. I get it. If you've been trying for 8 years, it's going to feel like you're running a marathon. And really, in the end, it's only the goal that counts. And it's a little bit like that phrase, isn't it? When you're in the world and you're desperately looking for a girlfriend and you don't find one because you're desperately looking for it, it might be that when you take your eye off the prize, if you like, or off the goal, that might be where you start to kind of get reawaken that warmth and connection and what have you. And just be tender with each other. I think just take the time to kind of sit with each other a little bit without having sex or trying to have sex, and just say, look, you know, this is, we've got to understand we're in a tricky situation here.
I hope that helps. That was really interesting, actually, the whole conversation.
Yeah,
so it was good to talk about sex. So, yeah. We'll put that link underneath about miscarriage, and keep your questions and dilemmas coming in, and we will try and answer as many as we can. But for now... Oh, also, if you're listening on podcasts and would like to see us, God knows why, we're on our YouTube channel, the Sawala Adelies, so check this out over there.
See you there.
See ya.